Victory or death!
Victory or death! Victory or death! Victory or death! Victory or death!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Radio Free Virginia. I'm your host, Hank Reardon, the voice of freedom, behind enemy lines here in the Commonwealth of Virginia, bringing you, the Patriots, the information you need to stay in the fight to preserve your liberty. This is episode 24-4, the fourth episode of 2024. And there's not much to talk about from a legislative front in Virginia at the moment. It's still crossover time. The Democrats are still pushing their bills through and killing all of ours. And so we'll see how that all shakes out. My guess is the governor, for the most part, is going to veto. I would assume he's going to veto all the gun bills, but who knows? I haven't been impressed with Youngkin yet. Maybe I will be. That would be great. I hope that I am. But we'll see. So that being the case, I'm going to talk about a couple different things. I'll start off with this story about Trump. Okay, I found this on Facebook. This guy named Michael Hurd, H-U-R-D, and he's got really good stuff. Libertarian kind of thinking, but also not libertarian, if that makes sense. Not to rain on anyone's parade, but today's South Carolina primary looked like a real election. Because it probably was. There's no reason to think South Carolina election districts delete votes like they dislike or manufacture mail-in ballots they do like at 4 a.m. Trump will probably be the Republican nominee, and Democrats will retain Biden or perhaps pick a different puppet commie fascist. Either way, Republican places like South Carolina, Texas, and Florida will go red, and Democratic communist places like New York and California will go blue on election night in November. It will all turn on Greater Atlanta, Greater Philadelphia, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Those places are run by the same people who pulled off the fraud last time. Zuckerberg and Soros money will pour into supporting the fraud, and you can bet the sum total of that money that John Roberts will not let the Supreme Court examine evidence of fraud, not ever, which is what happened last time. Nikki Haley keeps screaming that we have to stop the insanity by rejecting Trump. What a naive, lightweight fool. She's blaming the victim. The victimizers are not Trump and his supporters. The victimizers are the communists, fascists, and traitors who dominate our culture and have entirely overwhelmed our Congress, Supreme Court, and permanent bureaucracy in D.C., the most corrupt imperial city since the fall of Rome, and a more vicious and arrogant den of evil than anything since Hitler. In short, Trump and anyone who still cares about America and freedom have a very, very steep uphill battle to win, and even a steeper hill to climb if Trump does somehow win. My bet is still on secession, or more precisely, independence from the statist monstrosity that America's founders warned us about, the one we now have. America's imperial uniparty and its vapid, arrogant, pseudo-intellectual class are at war with the people. The war will continue and escalate, whether Trump again sits in the White House or not. I think he's probably right about that. And it is going to be an uphill battle. You know, we've got this, Nikki Haley lost, by the way. Duh. Oh, shocker. You know, she lost her home state where she was governor. I don't know the numbers. Doesn't matter. She lost. And so she'll claim it a victory. I was expecting to lose by this much, and I only lost by this much. So that's a win. So she, but she lost. She did. And there's no changing that. She's only in there because Democrats are funding her. She's only in there because Democrats are going to the polls and voting for her. She's only in there because a bunch of rhino people that hate Donald Trump and hate what he stands for, all the things that Michael Hurd is talking about here. That's it. There's a difference between certain different people. I'll give you an example. There's people like us. We hate the government. And there's other people, whether they're rhinos or leftists that aren't quite, left like, Ocasio-Cortez. They hate the current government, but we hate the government. And I don't mean government. Like, I don't think we should have government. I'm not an anarchist. I'm saying we hate the government. We hate everything about the government. Not the current government, the government. This is not the government that America is supposed to have. This is something else. And so we hate it. We're not the same as, say, a rhino that hates the current government. Well, I just don't like the current government. I think it should be us in charge of screwing everything up. They've created these bureaucracies, like immigration, all these others. Talking to a army friend who has been on the show, John Galt, and he confirmed that they are not using this biometrics technology that works really well. He said they use it overseas when he was deployed. This biometrics technology I've talked about at the border, they're not using it. And if they were using it, they'd have a complete database of every single one of these people that was in the country. They could run them with facial recognition, run them with iris scans. They could have DNA records. They could have all this stuff. No, and same with the kids. Same with the kids that they're trafficking, that the government, the United States government, is trafficking across this country using NGOs and other organizations, including themselves, that are sticking them on planes and shipping them wherever they go, and then who knows what happens to them. They end up in the sex trade. They end up having their organs harvested. Nobody knows. They've lost thousands of these kids. We just don't know. But, you know, let's say your kid was stolen. You really should watch, what's that movie with Jim Caviezel? I can't remember, but you all know it. The one about the trafficking that they just had. It's sick. It's really, really sick. But that's what's happening. They've lost thousands of these children. They don't know where they are. But it, you know, imagine if you're a mother or a father, there could be a process by which you could find out, is my child in that database? You give your DNA, and then they could find a familial match based on that data. And it's all just ones and zeros now. And with the help of AI that they're using everywhere, you could do that. Speaking of AI, I used it last week to create the show notes. And I thought, well, let's see how this does. And I upload the MP3. And I figured, well, it's going to take a while to analyze and whatever. I kind of looked away. About a minute later, I looked back and it was done. I'm like, what? And I clicked on the link and I'm like, oh my gosh, it goes second by second. About, it had it all translated out into text. But more importantly, it had a summary of what I was talking about. You don't think that they're using that technology on your phone calls? On your text messages? What do you think they built these giant server farms out in, I think it's Utah, the NSA? So, yeah, I mean, they're using this stuff. And they're using it against you. They're not using it against the bad guys. They're not using it against the criminals, the illegal aliens. They're not using it against them. No, they're using it against you. So, you still think that there's a political or some other solution out of the mess we find ourselves in? There's not. I've said a while ago that if, you know, if we're going to fight, it has to be very, very soon, because pretty soon you're going to find that we won't be able to, because of the technology that's being developed. I mean, gosh, this was probably a year or two ago that I said this, and this AI stuff was only being used secretly by the government, and now everyone has access to it. So, you know, hey, it's there. We're going to have to find a way around it. And at some point, we're going to have to fight back. We got this technology is an issue. I wonder, speaking of technology, what happened with AT&T? Oh, solar flares. Really? That only affected mostly AT&T? That's weird. Yeah, it wasn't solar flares. I don't know what it was, but it wasn't solar flares. I want to talk mostly in today's episode about communications. I do this every once in a while. I think it's time to do it again. Getting your ham radio license and trying test communications with your, we'll call it your tribe, whether it's a militia, mutual assistance group, just a group of friends, family, whatever, your tribe, you want to be able to communicate with your tribe point to point. This is totally possible in most areas. It's even more possible in certain areas, like say, you know, flat areas like Texas. You just get an antenna up high enough and you can talk to each other. There's nothing in the way. But it's harder in places like Virginia where it's rolling hills and other things. So we have, you know, repeaters that can repeat the signal. You've got towers you could put up, you know, Yagi antennas. I'm going to get into all this in a sec here. But this ability for you to be able to talk to each other is very important. And it's important to test. It's important to test your equipment. Now, you can get a handheld Baofeng UV-5R made by a 20 or 30 different companies that call it a Baofeng UV-5R. And you can program in frequencies, have a whole plan. But if you've not tested that, if you've not tested radios, if you've not tested antennas and tested various different things, you're not going to know if that's going to work when the time comes. Now, handheld radios are great for, say, a squad of guys or a group of people hiking through the woods. Great for that. If you're only, you know, half a mile apart, maybe two, depending on the terrain. Now, they're great in general. I think they're a great radio you should have. I have a pile of them. They're cheap, they're like $35. You get a better antenna for another $10, $20. They're a great radio. I've talked to somebody from the top of Apple Orchard Mountain, which is up on the Blue Ridge Parkway, who was all the way down in Smith Mountain Lake. I didn't do the mileage plot, but I know it's more than 20 miles. And, you know, the opportunity is there to make communications. It's all about elevation and antenna. It's much less about the radio. I'll talk about those Baofengs here. The receiver on those Baofengs is actually weak. It is not very good. And so while you might be able to transmit, you might also not be able to receive that signal. We've been doing some testing with some friends just to see how far we can talk to each other. The farthest we've made it is 14 miles, and that's over the existing terrain with existing equipment, nothing, you know, really big deal. I've got one of these Harbor Freight flag poles. It's a telescoping aluminum pole. It goes up about 15 feet, and then you got the antenna on top of that, whichever type of antenna you use. I've tried regular dipole antenna. Doesn't work very good. I've got a Yagi antenna, and it works really good, except I'm next to a tree, and the tree is absorbing most of that signal. So I've got to sort out, well, I need to move it, obviously, but I haven't figured out where. I do have a omnidirectional antenna, which will go everywhere. That's supposed to be really good. I haven't mounted that yet to test it, but have had some really good success about 12, 14 miles. I could probably make it further if I could get a little bit higher, if I could put a rotator on it. A Yagi antenna is a directional antenna. So it's an antenna that points in one direction. Very strong in the direction that's pointing. And then the further you go off axis of it, when you're turning it, the weaker it gets, but the stronger it gets as it points to where you want it to go. So really good when you want to go from point to point. If you take Google Earth and you plot out a line and you know, okay, my friend lives here and I live here, we are exactly 5 miles away or 10 miles or 20 miles or whatever, you know which path you have to take. It'll also really do these cool things where if you click on the properties, it'll show you a plot of all of the elevation between you and the person you're trying to reach. And in most cases, everyone that I've been able to talk to, there's been something in the way. But because we're mostly using, at least they can hear me if they can't talk to me or vice versa. So that tells me better antenna, more altitude, stronger radio, better, stronger radio. So the radio I'm using is a Yaesu mobile radio hooked up to a battery. So you can run that anywhere. So your comms are very important. You know, people talk about the best way to have communications. Well, there's local, there's squad, there's local, and there's regional. And then, of course, there's national. But, you know, regional and national are pretty much the same thing as far as the equipment you need to do it. So some people think that you should use CB radio. Well, you know, maybe there's an argument for that. I don't agree. Because here's what you have to do to make that work. You have to illegally modify the CB radio to be outputting much more power than you're legally allowed to output. What's the point? Just get your dang ham license. Or don't get your ham license and illegally operate, which I don't recommend because I'm a ham radio guy. And when people, one thing I've noticed about the ham community is, It's a challenge. They like the challenge. They will chase you down. They will find you. I'll give you an example. There was a guy who didn't like another ham radio guy, and every time they would do these directed nets, and he would, this one guy that the one guy didn't like would check in, you would hear him scream over the radio. He would do this all the time. They figured out that it only seemed to happen when this guy named Bob would check into the net. Well, Bob was told by some of the other hams, we want you to check in like 3 times to the net. Just come and say, I have an extra comment. Just say, and the guy did it every time. They were able to triangulate after 2 or 3 nights of this exactly where the guy lived. And then they got the club's lawyer to send a cease and desist letter because the FCC, they let us self-police this. But the FCC then takes over from that point and they go and chase the person, the offender, down. And it's not worth it. And it's so easy to get your ham license. I'm going to give you some resources at the end, but I'm going to tell you what is involved in getting your ham license. There's 3 different ham radio operator licenses. There's the technician, the general, and the extra. The technician is what most of you would want. That is your HF. If you want to do Morse code, you can do some HF stuff on a few select bands, but it's really limited. And it's mostly it's a CW, which is Morse code, or some other data stuff, but that's it. But local stuff, you can do all the repeaters, you can do radio to radio. And here's the thing, most of the antennas you're going to buy for, if you're going to buy one, which I recommend, it's fun to make. I love making my own antennas, but the ones I've bought have always been better than the ones I make. As far as the performance, they're more high gain and other things. And it's just easier. You just mount the dumb thing. You've got this license, and it lets you get access to the frequencies that the antennas were made for, say 144 megahertz as an example. If you're using MERS, you're in the 151 megahertz range, and the antenna isn't tuned for that, and you're not going to get the performance results. You actually could potentially damage your radio just the way that that the frequencies work, reflecting back through that antenna back into your radio because of the way the antenna is not tuned for that. It's a thing called SWR. Your SWR on 151 megahertz is probably about 2 to 5. And your SWR on your 144 megahertz is should be around 1 or 1.3. And what that essentially means is it is the measure of how much signal is being reflected back into your radio. You want as close to 1. 1 is effectively 0. You want as close to 1 as you can get, because that signal will reflect back into your radio. It will damage your radio over time. You can get away with it on short little bits. You can listen all day long, but you can't transmit. And so just getting your license is actually very easy. Here's what it consists of. There's a pool of 350 questions. You're only going to get 35 multiple choice questions. And it's going to be from those 35 sections. So let's say, in my case, when I studied for the ham test, I just couldn't wrap my mind around the equations, the Ohm's law. A lot of it didn't make sense. So much of it was, it looked confusing because it's very similar stuff in the terminology. And you had to know all of these little equations because you had to do it by hand. So I just decided, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to skip those. I'm just not even going to try, because I'm only going to get one question. And it's only about 3 questions total from all the sections that involve those equations. So there may be something that you just can't wrap your mind around, whatever it is. You skip it. Who cares? It's 35 questions. Some of you are so good at technical stuff, you could probably show up and pass the test and just because. But there are a lot of great resources out there. The test question pool is out there. You can see all the questions. You know, it's a matter of memorization. Now, here's how most people study for this. They go to one of these hamexam.org things and they take these practice tests, or they go to, there's lots of places, lots of resources out there for these practice tests. ARRL.org is one of the websites that you can go to and to find out where the tests are and get access to a lot of where the different practice tests are and such. So most people study like this. they go to one of these practice test things, and they just take the, they keep taking the practice test over and over and over again until they pass with an 80% or better. Do you know anywhere in society where that works? Do doctors, I hope not, do doctors just keep taking practice tests until they pass the, what do they call that, the MCATs or whatever? No, you learn the dang knowledge so that you, when you go take the test, you know it. It's ridiculous. So the general test is similar. It's 500 questions, I believe, and it's 50 questions total on the test. Same principles, but it's much more advanced stuff. There's a lot more frequencies. You're talking on HF, which I'll circle back to in a sec here. But let's look at your local ham radio license. If you get that, then you get a call sign, and you can call people with your call sign. You know, ABC123 calling ABC124, whatever your call sign is. It's going to be a KK4 something or a KM4 something. KI4 or something. So basically they keep adding a digit and a number to it. The 4 is your region, so that when other people are on, say on HF, they know they're hearing a 2 or a 1 or a 3 or a 5. That is a certain region of the country, and other call signs of certain regions of the world, and they do that. I don't spend much time on HF. I mostly listen, and I mostly set up antennas and do experiments where I'm seeing where the antenna reaches. I have a military Envis AS2259 antenna, and that is, it's a really nice antenna, and I can speak to, I run a program called Whisper. I'm kind of nerding out here, and this is a whole episode, it's going to be kind of nerd out. But there's a program called Whisper, and with that program, it sends out a signal, and then any station running Whisper that's receiving is logging that in on the internet. And then they send out transmissions as well. All the stations logging are also transmitting, doing the same thing. You're transmitting and receiving. Everything you hear, it logs. And it's all automatic. It's all computerized, all digital signals. I've made a contact with an antenna that's designed for local regional communications. Envis is Near Vertical Incident Skywave. You'll learn about that on the test. And essentially, the signal is pointed straight at the straight up instead of at an angle. And it's supposed to bounce off of the ionosphere and come back down to Earth. Well, it didn't do that this day. It just kept on going. It's pretty amazing. There's things called tropospheric ducting, and others where it goes up inside the, you know, the troposphere and comes out and pops out in another place. Same, it's like a wormhole for radio. And it just depends on what the atmosphere is doing, how much it's charged by the sun, and different things like that, and different times of day. And there's all these things, and you won't know that. So that's the thing. If it hits the fan, if you're a prepper, and you're like, oh, I've got all this ham gear, but you don't have a ham license, you've never used it, you never test your antennas. I mean, half this stuff doesn't work half the time for me, and I somewhat know what I'm doing. So you got to imagine this is, it's an experimental hobby. It's an amateur radio license hobby. It's a hobby. And you've got to test it, and you got to play with it and see what works. I've gone through so many antennas over the years and so many things. I've got one laying out in the yard right now because it's just a piece of crap, and I just look like whatever. It's not hard to get. A resource you can use that's really good is hamradiomastery.com. Ham Radio Mastery, you're mastering ham radio, hamradiomastery.com. And that one is really cool because what it does is you're not actually learning with this stupid methodology of memorizing bad answers. Each question has been broken down into a statement and then audio recorded so that you can listen. You can also read it, and it also has the question and just the answer. If you just want to read through question and answer, memorize it, boom, take the test. Some people are really good with that. I'm not, but you know, some people are. So that's a good one. There's for technician and general I think it's like 10 or 20 bucks for, it's 20 bucks for both. And I think it's 10 for just the one. So, I mean, it's come on. And here's the other thing. When you go to take your test, and you can find out where to take a test at ARRL.org. I mentioned that before. You can, and that's the Amateur Radio Relay League. And you can take both tests with the cost of one test. So if you wanted to, you could get your tech and your general all in one go. But it means more studying, but you know, you could do it. And then you can talk on HF, which is what we're going to talk about now. I'd like to thank Hopkins Real Estate for sponsoring this episode. If you're looking for real estate in the Lynchburg, Bedford, Campbell, Forest, you know, Amherst, this area and beyond, you can get in touch with them at adamhopkins.net. Adamhopkins.net. And he's got a great team. He's got land specialists, and he's got just a good group of folks. You're looking for a house, he's got you covered. And so just get in touch with them, adamhopkins.net, and they'll take good care of you. So let's talk longer range stuff. I mentioned some of the stuff talking to South Africa, you know, using Whisper. And that's the fun thing about HF communications is the idea that with the NVIS antenna is that you get good regional communications. Why is that important? Well, let's say we have a total collapse, which I'm not so sure that that's going to happen. We have a total collapse. But let's say that we do. Well, you're going to, you could get on the radio. You could start just tuning around the dials and just listen. You don't even have to talk to anybody. I almost never have a problem listening. It's usually when I want to talk to somebody. Either I'm not putting enough power out. My antenna is just not good enough. It's not facing the right direction, whatever. But I very rarely have a problem listening to someone. And there's a lot of information that's out there. It's called SIGINT, Signals Intelligence. And it's just pretty great. So you want to talk to somebody, let's say in North or South Carolina or up in Pennsylvania. That's easy. I mean, that's really easy. I've done that lots of times. Talked to people in New York. I've talked to people up in Illinois, Ohio. Not so much West Coast, like Tennessee. Haven't really gotten my antennas where, whenever I've set them up, I've never really had them pointing that direction. It's interesting. I've very rarely been able to get, you know, that way. And I don't know why that is. And I really haven't really cared because this is where I live. I live here. So if I want to know what's going on though, I could point my antennas. And antennas are pointed based on how they're oriented in the earth, north, south, east, west, and how you put them up. There's all kinds of antennas. Not going to really get into that. Lots of resources out there for building your own antennas. I've built my own copy of the AS2259, the NVIS antenna. I've got 3D printable parts. If you need something 3D printed, I've got a 3D printer. And just reach out to me. I'll make that work for you. It won't hardly cost you anything. But all the stuff you'd need is readily available to build your own antennas. The AS2259, in my opinion, is one of the best antennas because the antennas are the guy wires. So you got four legs, two ground, two radiating elements. And at the end of them is paracord, and you string it out, and it sets itself. It's, you know, it takes about, ideally you have two people. I've set it up by myself before. Ideally you would have two people to set this antenna up. And then from there, you can go for it. I mean, just make communication. It's pretty cool. So I've got you can use the military camouflage poles, and the one that's homebrew, it goes on top of that. And the one that I have that is the military one, it has all the stuff. The poles themselves are the connecting coax cable internally. And then at the bottom, you connect to it. That's a pretty great antenna. They're hard to find. They're not cheap. They're around $300. My friend Paul, who you remember as Antonio Francisco, sorry, Antonio, Francisco D'Anconia on the show, he passed away. He gave me one of those antennas, and it was a great antenna. It is a great antenna, but they're expensive. And unfortunately, they're looked at by the military, who doesn't really use them anymore. Some of the guard units do, some of the local defense, Virginia Defense Force and others, they still use them, but they're looked at as garbage. No, we don't need this anymore. So they just get thrown away, which is, I know it's wrong. They're not supposed to do that. They're supposed to put this stuff out on the surplus market, but they don't. And I know they don't because my friend who gave me one got his and a pile of others out of a dumpster at Fort Pickett, which they've changed the name to something stupid. So I know they're not doing what they're supposed to do because this one I have was thrown in the trash. So it's a shame because it is a really good antenna, especially for what you all would want it for, which is regional communications. The benefit is, you know, if I have somebody in another part of the county, say 20, 30 miles away, or even another county over, say 60 miles away, in theory, if we were both running these same exact antennas, we should be able to talk to each other. But not really been put to the test. There are some other great resources from a prepper standpoint you should check out. Radio Free Redoubt has a whole thing called Channel 3 Project, and it's a lot of communications-based stuff. They do a yearly exercise. Got a whole organization there you should check out. And it's all emergency preparedness radio, and they're using a lot of digital communications, which is a computer sending. So here's the thing. You want to talk voice. Let's talk bandwidth real quick. Put your fingers kind of like a goalpost with your thumbs together and your fingers up in the air. Imagine that is the bandwidth that is required for voice data, voice communications rather. And now take a piece of paper, and if you were to imagine a piece of paper between somewhere on there, that's your bandwidth and that's your frequency, right? The whole frequency is right there. A piece of paper is what is required for data. And CW is probably a half a piece of paper. That's Morse code. So the computer can pull out, even in a very noisy environment, can pull out that data communication where you need that whole bandwidth that I mentioned to talk on voice. So it's much harder to establish voice communication where it's not as hard to do data. And there's a lot of other benefits to data, being that you can narrow the bandwidth, you can shoot a much narrower part of the frequency. I'm not even going to say it makes it harder for them to find you, the bad guys, because the technology is so good for direction finding. I mean, if you're transmitting, don't do it from your house if it's grid down, because it's not going to be hard to find people in an environment like that. But so anyway, there's your little nerdy ham radio talk. I don't do those much, about once a year, talk about this kind of stuff. But it is something you should really look at the very least for your family. You should all have radios, have them in the car, have a little note card with what to do if things fall apart. You could go even as far as put them in a Faraday bag. There's a lot of stuff out there you could do. It kind of depends, you know, where you're at on the prepper journey. It's not my number one place that I start with people. I always start with food, then guns, then comms. It probably should be food, comms, guns. The reality is that if you show up at my house, I've mentioned this before, with food that you can feed yourself, well, I got guns and radios I can hand you. Most of, like, people that you would want to show up at their house, if you have food, they got the stuff. Don't worry about that. But if you show up with, hey, look at me, I got my 50 caliber Barrett that cost me $5,000. Go away. I can't feed you. That's the reality of the situation. I got family that I know are going to try and show up here. I kind of feel obligated to feed them. Certainly the direct family. Maybe not the faraway cousins and things that might show up. But comms is very important, and you should really take it seriously. It's not hard to get. Your amateur radio license is like so easy to get. Oh, but they'll know me. They'll know who I am. They already know who you are. Unless you're a total hermit, unless this is you, you're not on any social media, never have been. You hardly ever send an email, and when you do, it's benign. Hey, let's have work talk, okay? You've never used a credit card to purchase a gun or ammunition or food. You don't have any radios. You've never purchased any of those things unless you were spending with cash. Okay, then they might not know who you are. Maybe. But most of us, there's a trail. They know who we are. And, you know, the day comes where they want to come get you. Well, they'll just come get you. So keep that in mind with all that. Well, I'll go ahead and wrap it up here. Want to... leave you with one thing. Think about the movies you've watched, like, say, Lone Survivor. What led to the situation that they found themselves in? It's a failure of communication. There have been a lot of videos, a lot of movies that are based on real life. It was a failure of communication, failure to establish it, to get the information, to receive the warning to withdraw. And so think about that. Think about getting your ham license. It is actually a lot of fun, even for the non-nerds like me. Thank you for listening. Remember, you were not made to fit in. You were born to stand out. I'm Hank Reardon. This is Radio Free Virginia. God bless you.